If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
They thought they'd get away with it until now. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
Thanks for joining us. The federal case against Sean Diddy Combs just got a lot bigger. New superseding indictment was filed by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York. It has significantly expanded the scope of charges against Diddy and some of the repercussions as well. Federal prosecutors now allege that Diddy operated what they are calling the Combs Enterprise, a criminal organization engaged in sex trafficking, bribery, obstruction of justice, and even arson. Not just, you know, making hit singles and hawking vodka. The indictment paints a picture of a deeply orchestrated system designed to manipulate, control, and silence victims over nearly two decades. Federal agencies have been working behind the scenes for months now, possibly years. This case has now reached a pivotal moment. Today, we're joined by retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer, host of the Break the Case podcast, available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube as well, to discuss what the superseding indictment means, how the FBI and federal agencies built these cases, and what happens next as we move towards trial. Jennifer, let's start here. Given your expertise in federal investigations, what does the inclusion of a RICO-style charge and expanded allegations tell you about the kind of case prosecutors have built against Diddy so far?
Oh, anytime you have a RICO charge, which again is that Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act, which really sets forth what they're looking at. You're looking at the influence of really one person or more, in this case, Diddy, orchestrating all these criminal activities, covering up, having agreements, and moving forward with an enterprise that he gained financially, he gained sexually, he gained in every way on. And so those are kind of the parameters. And RICO is something that prosecutors usually want to stay away from because they are so complicated. But the whole act, of course, began trying to counter Italian organized crime, mafioso type crime, and then bled into the Mexican and Colombian cartel organizations. And then now, this is the first time we've seen it used in this way, but it's certainly applicable when you look at all the criminal violations afoot.
We did see it, though. We saw it in the R. Kelly case, though, as well. Did we not?
Oh, my gosh, they did.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
No,
you're
that's
right.
Fine. Yeah.
I forgot about that one.
Sure. I mean, how, tell me how, just to explain to the audience a little bit more about the difference between sex trafficking charges or just the all the individual charges that we have against him, but the RICO statute, that really opens up the door for investigators to go a lot deeper than they otherwise could, correct?
Right. Well, normally you have huge statute of limitations issues with a lot of these charges that they're looking at. By incorporating RICO, you get to use the last known charge. In other words, the last thing Diddy did wrong, that's where your statute of limitations starts from. Mm-hmm. So you can reach clear back into, you know, the deepest realm of when he first started. And that's what they wanted to accomplish by doing a RICO charges. Because if not, you could just do these individually. Mm-hmm. And that happens often. Count one is this. Count two is this. Count three. They couldn't do that in this case because of statute concerns. This way, they got it all.
What does it tell you about the case where the first indictment, I believe, went back to 2006, if I'm correct? I could be off on that by a few years, but I believe it was 06. These ones now go back to 04. Is that telling you that they, you know, the first one they threw out, okay, we got this far, this is enough to indict him, let's start with that, and now let's start working backwards? Because that seems to be what's going on here with new pieces of this case and new charges that are going back another 4 years. Are we going to likely continue to see new indictments coming forward that go back to 2020 or 2000, the 1990s or some sort, as they continue to put more pieces together and continue to see this just didn't start in 04 or 06. It keeps going.
I see that I would expect at least one more superseding indictment. And that's because, as you said, as they continue to look at all this evidence, as soon as they have charges that reach back to other dates, they're going to want to include it all. I would like to see them go back to 1999 because that shooting still bothers me of Netanya Rubin. That I keep wondering if they're going to reach back and grab any part of that. But it'll keep going. As long as they have the evidence to support a particular charge reaching back that far, they'll keep superseding.
How do they reach back to the shooting? Because Diddy was found not guilty on those charges. They ended up getting Shine for it, and Shine has already come forward and said, yeah, I took the fall for Diddy, the actual woman who was shot in the face. Actually, she's in the new The Fall of Diddy doc out on ID and Max, saying, and she said this for years, that it was Diddy. If anybody remembers who shot her, she says she was looking straight at it and Diddy had the gun and was right there. And you have other eyewitness accounts saying that it was Diddy. You have a few that said, no, it wasn't him. One could argue why they're saying that now that we know of Diddy's tactics of intimidation and manipulation. But the key people in this, the one who took the fall, the person who had the bullet lodged in their head, they all say it was Diddy. But again, how does that not go into a double jeopardy territory because of the RICO statute? How can they incorporate that even though a court already said you're not guilty on this?
Well, first of all, you're really looking at separate possible charges. So you would not be charging the assault again. Mm-hmm. You would be charging it as a federal crime that took place within the RICO. I don't think they really need to incorporate it, to be quite honest, because they have so much right now on Diddy. He's never going to see the light of day if they're able to prove these charges already. I think many of us, though, would like to see the individuals that were involved in that situation at least, you know, have that re-examined from a federal standpoint in this RICO. That's me. But they don't need it, and they may not reach back that far. But I believe his criminal enterprise did go back that far. And I guess my point is, this is an example that he was doing criminal conduct clear back then, because certainly, minimally, they jumped in a car and went on a, you know, a high speed chase down after that situation. So I guess it just speaks to how far back, and I think it goes even further back than that, he was involved in criminal type conduct.
It's been interesting reading through the new superseding indictment. I actually just did it on camera and on the podcast. So if anybody wants to literally listen to it and not go through all 14 pages of it, it's there. It's about a 40-minute piece. And we kind of break it down piece by piece. But I also said in there, and keep listening, because I'm talking to you about this to get some more clarification and understanding from an FBI standpoint as to what's going on here. I want to talk about some of the people who were likely in testifying for that grand jury, because there are some new allegations in this. It's a lot of the same, but from different people who were not necessarily named in the first one. And they don't name them in here. It's a lot of Jane Does, John Does, and things of that nature. But what I have noticed is that some of the allegations that are now in the federal indictment, in this new one, they match up with some of the civil allegations that have been made, including the one about holding somebody over a balcony. I think of Shug Knight and Vanilla Ice and that legend from years ago. But now allegedly we have it from Diddy and holding someone over a balcony and to intimidate them, to threaten them, possibly kill them. But obviously that did not happen. They lived to tell the story. What does that tell you about how the feds are getting their information on this? Are they looking at some of these criminal cases or some of these civil cases that have been filed and going, we need to talk to you? And obviously there's a lot of them, and only certain pieces and certain ones seem to be coming up now federally. How close do they go and look at all these civil cases that are coming forward and all of these allegations that continue to come forward, whether it be in a civil manner or through some of these documentaries?
They're looking at everyone, Tony. Mm-hmm. They're going to look at each one and see if it has merits. And that means assigning a specific agent to look over a set number, whether that's 10 or 20. I mean, we're talking, you know, well over 100 here in this case. And you're going to have a squad that literally that's what they're doing. That's what they're charged with, is looking at each of these. And recall, of course, I think that part of the reason this really got legs started with the civil suit, mm-hmm. That were involved in these. And once they went to the prosecution's office and these agents got a hold of this, they said, whoa, wait a minute. These are violations of federal law. This isn't only civil, it's violation of federal law. And that's what they're going to be looking at to continue building this conspiracy against him.
There is certainly a lot that that can be looked at here, going way, way back. As far as this being a superseding indictment with new information in here, what has stood out to you personally in understanding these new charges, these new angles that they're going at in here, as basically, you know, it's becoming a second brick wall against him. We got the first one, we got the second one. It's like you're really getting boxed in here now, Diddy. What to you has stood out?
What's really stood out to me is they are not stopping. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you actually will stop. When you have so much, you really will. You'll just say, wait a minute, we've spent so much time and so many resources. Our office is overwhelmed by all this evidence just from the search warrants alone. Plus the fact that, of course, one of the last questions you ask of any witness is, and who else was involved? Who else might have information? And, you know, then you have to interview them and it just keeps going and going. So sometimes there's just a point that you say, all right, we're cutting it off right here and we're going to make sure we have all the evidence against these particular points, but we're not going to expand. Mm-hmm. And so I think what really grabs me, and again, I wasn't surprised by it, but they're not ready to stop yet. And I wonder what their litmus test is for saying, we got enough.
Yeah.
It's time. Just stop. Or are they more concerned with other victims and they're really making an example of this?
That's what my next question is going to be for you. Why do you think it is that they have not stopped if they have enough to, you know, basically put him away for life? And yes, I mean, we want justice for all of the victims, but again, you only have so much time and so many resources to go into this. And it really is justice for everyone if we can just get him away for good. Are they needing to get more, do you think, to really make sure that there is no way, shape, in hell that he's going to get out of this? Or is it just it's leading to such other big areas that may lead them to, in fact, maybe other people as well that they could build other cases against?
I think it's a combination between, one, when you have cases like this, when you're talking about sex trafficking and human trafficking, and you know, you're concerned about those victims and you want to make sure justice is given to them equally. In other words, how can you turn your back on one victim just because you've got a lot against somebody and just ignore the other? So that's a big piece. And I think the other piece about this is also who else might be involved? And I think they don't want to do a deal with Diddy. And so they would rather expose others through these other witnesses where they don't need Diddy for anything.
That's what I'm wondering about some of the folks named in this, because the not named, but alluded to in this. And certainly people are giving their accounts of what life was like with Diddy, including folks that, you know, probably did some criminal offenses on the part of Diddy, doing some bidding for him. Do you see other people in this, people that were close to him, whether it, you know, be like the his head of staff or just anybody that, that may have been complicit in going forward with Diddy facing charges? Or are they going to be looking at this as, we get it, you were all coerced into this? Although I think you can make the argument some of them were not necessarily coerced. They were just morally bankrupt and just went along with their job, not really fearing for their lives. Are they making deals with all of those people? Or do you think we're going to see some of these folks come back and face charges, even if they did help the government in helping bring some of this evidence to light?
I think, Tony, you're going to see charges against the most culpable and those that were involved with anything to do with the sex trafficking piece of this. You know, if they cross state lines, if they're bringing minors over, even not minors, if they were involved with the drugging, the doping, the taking advantage of people who couldn't say yes, which is rape, if you're talking about that, I think they'll be charged. Even if there's a deal, they're going to face repercussions. You just cannot turn your back on that in these cases. It happens all the time. You get help, and what they get is not the full brunt of charges, but they're going to have to pay the piper.
Yeah. The big difference here, I think I know it, but I want you to explain it a little bit more. This versus just a criminal case or even one of the civil cases that are out there. The bar as to which will be in these indictments against Diddy is pretty high. It's not just you're going to make these accusations and hope they play out in court. If the federal government is laying out specific accusations, which they are in this, a lot of it having to do with videos, having to do with the contents of those videos, they're laying a lot of that out in the new superseding indictment. Would they be doing that if they didn't have possession of those videos? If they haven't seen those videos, would they name those things just solely on a witness saying, I've seen the video or I saw him taping? Would they only name that stuff if they know for fact that it exists and they have in fact seen it or have it in their possession?
No. In my experience, when you have a case of this magnitude, not only the magnitude of the evidence involved, the magnitude of the person you're going after being somebody famous, but then also when you have the publicity and the public eye that is going to be on your case, everything, Tony, is going to be corroborated or it's not going to be involved. You're not going to just have somebody up on the stand and say, oh, he did this without corroborating information that's very strong. I think you can totally expect that, Tony.
Let's talk about the forfeiture allegations, which I believe are kind of a new part to this whole indictment. It goes on for several pages. In a nutshell, it basically says, as a result of committing the offenses, we're going after anything and everything personal and business related that you have that could have in any way, shape, or form been gained over the course of this time period through your criminal actions. And if we can't find it, if we can't get to the assets that we believe you have of this, then we're just going to go after your personal stuff and take that value away from you. How does this work at this point? The forfeitures, do they happen before he even gets into a courtroom? Or are all those basically threats of, look, if we find you guilty, all this stuff goes?
No, it's A. So in other words, you're going to start going after the particular, whether it's car, whether it's a house, whether it's a building, no matter what it is, as soon as you can build the case that was gained through ill-gotten means, mm-hmm. whether that, and typically that's financially. Mm-hmm. So typically you have to tie in money laundering, or you have to tie in a criminal activity that caused you to get the money to be able to afford the asset. So, but that's something that's done before. So they're not going to wait on the, you know, any conviction or anything. Mm-hmm. You can bet you they're working on going all of that now. And I think the big reason that it has a lot of legs is going to have to do with taxation. Mm-hmm. And I think when the IRS, who I guarantee they are working with, they have their own criminal investigative division. They're called CID agents. And those CID agents are going to be looking through all the financials in this and assisting HSI with this, because that's not HSI's bailiwick. And I think that's where we could really see some assets being turned over to the government.
How do they connect these sort of things as far as business gains? We're talking about, you know, illicit sex parties, rape, you know, interstate transportation, kidnapping, things of that nature. How does that pertain to the business itself and what they would be getting in forfeiture?
Well, it's interesting because was his legitimate businesses actually funding all of the illegal activity he had going on?
Okay.
In other words, these parties, you know, would have cost a lot of money, mm-hmm. and the locations they were at. You know, when you conduct illegal activity in a certain location, you make that location vulnerable to forfeiture, because but for that location, how could you conduct that criminal activity? So there's a lot of ways for them to get their teeth into some of his assets, I believe.
So basically any property that he would have had these things at, so the New York home, the LA home, all that, which he's currently trying to sell, they're on the market. Is it a safe assessment that those are going to be seized now, and it's not Diddy that's going to be selling them? It'll be the federal government taking care of that sale?
You know, I don't know. They have a long way to go on that. It's my belief. They have a long way to go on that, because there's, you know, it's not as cut and dried as that. Mm-hmm. To me, their strongest avenue for seizure is going to be the tax. Mm-hmm. Piece of it. Did he truly claim all of the income that he was receiving? And what all was he receiving from all of these criminal enterprise activities? Mm-hmm. We don't know, but I can tell you, in my experience, that was the number one thing we used when we went after a huge organized crime conglomerate. Mm-hmm. Particularly the cartels is my particular area of experience. And what you looked at, oh my gosh, you dug your teeth into the fact that they had a house that was worth $10 million and nothing to support them being able to purchase that. And then that's how you take it.
Okay.
If you have a vehicle that's used to deliver, drugs or narcotics, you can seize it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what they're going to be looking at, you know, the planes, mm-hmm. right? Were yeah. they using his planes to transport these women for sexual, activities? So to me, that's where I would start.
With the properties though, too, I mean, the properties, they had, you know, like the baby oil, you know, thing, the 1,000 bottles in a giant room. And what we're seeing now in some of the other allegations that have come forward from some assistants, there was all sorts of other sexual related products. I don't need to go through the laundry list of them. Drugs, all you name it, all sorts of illicit drugs, all sorts of things that no one should be in possession of. And if they're on the property and they can prove that they were on the property, they were seized on the property, their guns were seized. He had guns seized on the property that were illegally obtained, or the serial numbers scratched out. The fact that those all resided there, and a lot of these allegations come from these things happening on these specific locations or at these specific specific locations, the more that that ties to those properties, does that really put them more into a lane of that, yeah, these are up for forfeiture, just like a vehicle would be?
Yes, absolutely. But you're looking at the fact that these were actually his homes, where he resided, where other people resided. How often were they used for this? Was that the purpose of their home? Mm-hmm. Or was the purpose of their home really as their residence, but then on the side they had the freak-offs? So I think they're going to, it's a little bit, when it comes to the home, it's a taller mountain to build, unless they can prove that those homes were acquired through illicit monies. I think it's just a little bit tougher because, how many freak-offs were there? Did they have a freak-off every day? Sure. Did they have a freak-off twice a year? So I just think it's going to be harder to make that leap that, a $20, $30 million home is going to be seized because of one freak-off that was there.
Sure.
But if they can monetarily prove that he wasn't paying taxes and that's how he bought that home, that puts it square in the eye, the government.
How much do you think this is going to affect his ability to represent himself, to pay attorneys? Obviously, he was a billionaire for a while. I don't know if that's his status anymore. But are they also going after this to limit his ability to, basically get any attorney in the world he wants for fighting if he doesn't have the assets to really pay them? Do you think it goes that far? Or would it affect him to that level?
I think it could, but I don't think that's necessarily the government's motive, so to speak. I think it really comes down to saying, listen, if you are conducting a criminal enterprise and you are profiting from that, we're taking everything we can from you that you utilized in your organization to conduct the activity, like the houses we spoke of, mm-hmm. planes, whatever. And we're getting our hands on everything that allowed this criminal activity to take place. What it does, though, obviously, as you just pointed out, it could limit what attorneys could pay. And you can bet these attorneys are going to make sure that this is one of the first things that they try to protect are his funds. And you and I talked about this before, Tony. Imagine the amount of money that is still being spent. Oh, and yeah. I'm just wondering what's really coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, there's certainly royalties and things of that nature that would come in. But, it's not like he's actively running a successful record company anymore. Or was it ever a record company, I guess? Or was it something else that made music? That's, I think, one of the bigger questions of all this, the further that we go back into time. Let me ask you about the victims here and the ones that we have not heard from yet. The fact that we kind of saw an avalanche of people coming out of the woodwork after the first federal indictment was dropped, and now you have the superseding indictment. Do you expect that we're going to see a lot more allegations come forward? Because essentially you've created a second, you got the big brick wall that's super high. Good luck getting through that, Diddy. Now we have another Teflon wall with sharp razor wire right behind that. So if you get through that, you got to get through this. Does this open up the opportunity, at least in terms of mental safety, for some folks to come forward who may have still been holding back?
Absolutely. And now we've added more years.
Yeah.
So now these people that were offended allegedly back during that time frame, now they're open to being able to come in and tell their stories of abuse if they have it. So you've opened up the time frame. And as you said, you're offering more and more blankets of sort of security that they can't be retaliated against by Diddy and his group.
It will be fascinating to continue to watch. Do you see a third superseding indictment? This is just pure speculation coming before we start seeing more individuals named, celebrity or not, with charges?
I would see if they're going to do a third superseding, which would not surprise me. Mm-hmm. I think it will be before. I think they want to have everything locked down mm-hmm. on what they're going after. And then you're going to see some names.
One more quick question on this for you. What, when it comes to making a deal with people who have been involved with Diddy, especially those who, you know, may have just been doing his bidding, whether they felt coerced or not, that's, I guess, up to debate, depending on what the action is and who the individual is. But those who are in the questionable category of it wasn't a victim, someone who was basically being held captive, but like assistants, his security, things of that nature, who were basically complicit with the things that he was doing. What kind of deals do they make in those sort of cases? Is it like, okay, you talk to us, sign here, and we're going to make sure that we don't charge you? Or is it more of a, come sit and talk with us and we'll see what we can figure out after we know what you know?
Well, typically in a case like this, it could go both ways. You know, come talk to us. We'll figure out whether you can give us something. I don't see it going that way in this case. I see what would be happening is actual immunity letters being offered, mm-hmm. But very specific. In other words, saying, we have you on this. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, I think the government's already able to charge on XYZ, but saying anything you allow or anything you give us outside of what we know, mm-hmm. you're immune from prosecution on. And that's how I see these deals going down. And I think that that's also why they have a lot of teeth, Tony, when you know the government already has enough to put you in prison for years, you're very motivated to come forward and make a deal. So I think that's the type of immunity deals that probably are happening behind the scenes.
So essentially someone could offer up some new information that the government does not know, but anything that they're offering up that they already know, they could be prosecuted on those pieces, but wouldn't be prosecuted on the new pieces that they're bringing to the puzzle.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's got to make a lot of people a little bit scared. Does it not also kind of encourage those to come forward sooner than later to bring the information before it's already found out through another party?
It does, especially in a case like this that's so well publicized. Mm-hmm. And they know what they've done wrong. And so for them to get an attorney to go to the prosecution's office and say, listen, we have some things you're going to want to know, but we need immunity on what we're bringing forward. I think you're going to see a prosecutor that's very interested in that. And then that's when, I mean, just talking the imaginations of how it works, that's when then the agents get involved. They come in and they start that full-scale interview. Tell us everything you know.
So even doing it preemptively of the government even saying, hey, we know you're probably involved in this in some way, shape, or form, and we're going to find out. Even before that were to come out, if it were to simply, as far as we know, the government doesn't know anything about our involvement, but we know we're involved in some way, shape, or form in this. So let's get out there and just tell them and take a chance that, okay, let's hope they don't know any of this yet. And let's just spill our beans before they even give us any inkling that they're even looking at us.
That happens all the time. They'll hire an attorney. And again, that attorney will talk to the assistant United States attorney, and the assistant United States attorney will make a decision after talking with the agents. Mm-hmm. You know, what do we have on this person? Because they'll want to limit it. And then there's cases too, where they come in and you don't have anything against them. Mm-hmm. And then that's a real win-win for that individual coming in.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're neck deep in a dark, twisted tale. And just as the tension peaks, bam, a commercial about some miracle diet pill breaks the spell. It's like finding a fly in your soup after the first bite. But here's the fix. True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. You get to enjoy your crime stories without the junk, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that go beyond the surface, and early access to all the gruesome details. It's like swapping out a can of cheap beer for a glass of fine whiskey. So search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and keep the darkness flowing uninterrupted.